tune out of the anti-white system and tune in to the pro-white system.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Wednesday, the 2nd of September, 2026, and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, streaming at radioalbion.com. Today I want to talk a little bit about the British Empire and also about the education system. And the article comes from GB News, and the headline is Pupils Urged to Debate Polarising British Empire in new charity project. And I'm not really sure where to come down on this. I mean, a polarizing, so if they're actually getting the children to look at this from two opposing views, that's good, surely. But what if the information that the children are being given is slanted in one direction? It means that the people that are arguing for the British Empire, for instance, are not going to have the information there to make a good argument. And the people that are against the British Empire are going to be furnished with a lot of information to make their argument. So on the surface of this, you can say, well, it's good that they're teaching people the pros and the cons. But then if you think about it, it means that they control both sides of the debate, essentially. They control both sides of the argument. Pupils will be encouraged to debate the polarising British Empire as an educational charity launches a new book on the topic for schools. Parallel Histories, led by former Labour Minister Bill Rammell, worked with over 3,000 schools, providing them material containing contrasting perspectives on contentious parts of history. The charity's latest e-book on British Empire follows other resources on the conflict in Northern Ireland between Israel and Palestine and on Russian President Vladimir Putin and Ukraine. And I wonder if they'll ever do one on World War II, for instance, on Germany's side in the war against the Allies. Of course, that would be weighted completely towards one side on that, and I should imagine that these are also completely weighted when they talk about President Vladimir Putin and Ukraine. Will they actually be saying that the people that actually live in these areas of the Donbass, that they all speak Russian, they're all Russian speakers, that they're all still living there, and we never hear about how terrible life is under occupation by the Russian forces? We don't hear that at all, do we? That's because they voted to become a part of Russia. They held a referendum and wanted to join Russia. And Ukraine and Zelensky were amassing forces to attack them. And it's not like they hadn't attacked them before. They'd attacked them lots of times over the 8 years between the Kiev uprising and the special military operation in 2022. I really don't think that they're going to be teaching these school children that. They're going to be giving them limited resources on the Russian side, and they're going to be giving them lots of resources on the Ukrainian side. And also, when it talks here between Israel and Palestine, you wonder what they're going to actually be giving them there. Bearing in mind that these teachers are extreme leftists, then they probably will be likely to be portraying the Palestinian case as being more weighted than the Israeli case. I may be wrong. I mean, they may give them equal information on both, but I certainly don't think they would be giving them equal information on Russia and Ukraine. And also with the British Empire, I don't think they will be giving them objective information on that either. Mr. Rammell told GB News the majority of Britons understand the importance of debating contested history. It is important to debate. It's important that we have a conversation about these things. But the problem today is that you are told that if somebody disagrees with you, that they should be silenced and that they should not be allowed to actually explain their position. They should be deplatformed. So we're essentially telling children two things. We're telling them that some opinions are just so bad they should never be heard and we should be silencing them. And then at the same time, they're saying to them, oh, yes, well, we should be debating contested history. Of course, the BBC gets around this by saying, oh, well, this isn't contested anymore, so we don't have to provide a balanced argument. They say that about climate change. They say, oh, well, the science is all settled on climate change. We don't have to provide a balanced argument. Same about immigration. Oh, that's all settled. Immigration is wonderful for us. So we don't have to provide a balanced argument when we talk about immigration. And this is the way that they get around these things, particularly with the BBC. We commissioned YouGov last year on whether or not schools should teach contested history, and an overwhelming majority, 74%, thought that they should, he told GB News. I agree, they should teach contested history, but they should give an objective view of both sides. Participants are encouraged to form two teams and make arguments based on sources in the book, which will be free, before swapping materials to argue the other side. And this is useful because it gets you to see things from the other person's point of view. I mean, this is the reason for doing this. And we should try and see things from our opponent's point of view. That's why they do this. But the problem is that it also can be seen as encouraging people to argue for things that they don't actually believe in. So in actual fact, they're lying and training them up to argue for things that they don't actually believe in. And that's really teaching people to be dishonest. So it's not such a good thing from that point of view. But from the point of view of being objective and seeing the arguments from your opponent, it's good. And this is what should be done, but it isn't done, is it? The people that are anti-immigration have to be deplatformed. The left aren't actually told what our views are. They're given straw man arguments. Talking of straw man arguments, with William Fink on Patriotic Weekly Review last week, there has been lots of positive views about it and people asking questions. But also there have been people running Christian Identity down, and I've yet to see that done without using a straw man argument. I mean, the other day I saw an Adam Green video, and he was claiming that CI claimed that the Israelites originated in the Irish. And that's the sort of straw man argument that you get from people when they criticise Christian Identity. They don't actually look at what Christian Identity say. They just argue against some fantasy that they have that Christian Identity people believe in. I mean, I've even seen people try to disprove Christian Identity by showing DNA studies that effectively show that white people originated in Asia Minor. Which is Turkey, which is the Near East, which is effectively what Christian Identity teaches. And I've literally seen people showing that as evidence of why Christian Identity is wrong. People should really research the subjects that they're going to talk about before they talk about them. Getting back to this article, we get students to look at the raw historical sources to look at whether empire was a force for progress or whether it was a system for exploitation and oppression. Mr. Rammell, a former high education minister under Sir Tony Blair, said. Well, I did this. I looked at slavery, and I went right the way back to the original eyewitness sources, and I discovered that it was very different to the way that slavery is actually portrayed today. But I don't think that these school children are going to be shown these the same eyewitness sources that I saw when I was investigating this stuff. I don't think they're going to see anything that is actually pro-slavery. They would filter that out. That would be an unacceptable opinion for the children to have. We get students to need the service to look at it from both perspectives and then to debate first from one perspective with an opposing team arguing from the other point of view. And then crucially, they reverse the sides so that they can argue it from both perspectives. It's quite interesting this. I mean, when I was on my probation period after prison, when I was having to stay at the hostel and I was having weekly visits from, I always forget the name of the organisation. It's one step up from Prevent. And the guy was actually quite good. He was quite knowledgeable. And that was one of the things that we would do is we'd try and argue things from both perspectives. And he'd get me to argue for left-wing points. It's just to help you to understand your opponent's opinions and why your opponent thinks these things. And this is one of the reasons why I don't like to think negatively of my opponent, of our opponents. I like to think that they are motivated by wanting to try and do the right thing, the same as we are. And I know that it can come out sometimes the opposite way, and it can look as if they're deliberately doing things to harm us. But I think in most instances, it's a case of the road to hell is paved with good intentions. People can have good intentions in what they do, but it can have negative results. And of course, the argument against that, as was made very well by Grandpa Dan last Friday, is yes, but if they keep doing it, then how can you say that it's being done in good faith? How can you say that they've actually have a moral background to doing this, a moral reason for doing it, when it keeps having these immoral results? Well, the initiative by Parallel Histories comes as students head back to school on Tuesday. Mr. Rammel said it was important for pupils to learn history and for teachers to trust them to decide for themselves. But that isn't what's going to be going on here, though. They're going to be indoctrinating the children, telling them how bad the British Empire was. And then on the side of telling them how good it was, they're not actually going to be giving them the full information, I don't think. The program's debating points include: Empire spread the infrastructure of the modern world versus British imperial growth was built through systemic exploitation. Of course, this systemic exploitation, this is what the left teach. But the fact of the matter is that the British Empire did spread the infrastructure of the modern world. And what that meant was that it was roads, technology, hospitals, libraries, a system of law. I mean, some of these countries never even had a system of law before the British people went there. I doubt whether they will be telling them that the British people taught them how to read and write, for instance, or that they brought them law. And then they might talk about some of the technological achievements, but I think they will try and hide the fact that certain people couldn't even read or write, or invented the wheel even before the British people went there. Empire built modern government versus empire made exploitation and oppression lawful. Again, I think the people that were involved in the British Empire, the fact that they set up government there and then handed that government over to the people that they previously ruled over, shows that the intention was always to civilize these people and bring them up to a certain standard of living, a certain standard of ability, and then hand the government over to them. And they say it was exploitation and oppression. But in a lot of these places, these people had resources that they were just not using. There's a famous quote about the African treading diamonds and gold underfoot and never having dug them out of the ground, never having done anything with them in thousands of years. So if it wasn't for white people going over there and then showing these people how to extract these resources and how to then turn them into manufactured goods, they would still be living in the Stone Age, a lot of these places. So you can't really say that it's exploitation and oppression when those countries have been raised up to a modern standard of living and then handed over to the people who were originally there, handed over to these indigenous people. And in a lot of cases, the indigenous people have then destroyed the country and it's all falling apart, particularly in places like South Africa, places like India, where the white people built railways, all this infrastructure, and then the Indians just haven't maintained it. It's the same in South Africa. White people built all these things and then gave it all to black Africans, and they haven't maintained it at all, and it's now all falling apart. I've even seen videos of Africans smashing apart concrete to get the reinforcing rods from within the concrete, and they're smashing the concrete on their storm drains, effectively. So it's going to flood because they're doing this. And you see them climbing up telegraph poles to cut the wire down so that they can sell the wire. And they're literally destroying the infrastructure of these countries that effectively white people built for them. Empire secured order through trade and alliance versus empire imposed rule by coercion. Trade and alliance, I think, is the truth, because, I mean, say, for instance, when we landed in Africa, these black Africans, they instantly wanted to buy our goods. They wanted the sugar, they wanted the silk, they wanted the cotton, they wanted the alcohol, they wanted the guns, they wanted the bullets, they wanted all these things that white people had. And in exchange, they said, well, all we have is human resources. We have an endless supply of human resources, and we use them ourselves, and here we are. We will sell you these humans in exchange for these goods. And that was essentially how the system had worked in Africa for thousands of years. If the Africans wanted anything, if the black Africans wanted anything, they would swap it for other black Africans. And that was the economy that they had. So I don't think it was so much rule by coercion. As it says here, they secured order through trade and alliance. And in actual fact, when we banned slavery, the hardest people to get to stop doing slavery was the black Africans. And lots of people lost their lives preventing the slave trade in Africa. Lots of white people lost their lives trying to prevent black Africans from enslaving other black Africans. And you look at the country today, and particularly in Libya, and the same thing is still going on. I mean, that just shows you that's what these people naturally do. That's their natural economy, is capturing other black people and selling them as slaves. And you can do all you can to stop it, which is what the British have done for well over a century now, but it still exists over there, which sort of shows you that's what it comes naturally to them to do. Empire was defended at the time as a means to reform and improve, versus empire was challenged at the time as exploitative and oppressive. Well, of course, the fact that people were challenging it and saying it was exploitative and oppressive, that just shows you that white people were not racist. White people were concerned about the well-being of these other peoples. I think the most interesting thing to learn about, or most interesting point to learn about the British Empire, is that the great anti-slavery campaigner David Livingstone, he went into Africa, he saw the Congo slave trade, which was 10 times worse than the Atlantic slave trade. It was absolutely horrendous. And he said the way to stop this is we need to build ports, we need to build cities, we need to colonize Africa. And then we can teach them to manufacture goods and items that can be sold on the world's markets. And then we'll get them to make those goods and sell those goods rather than capturing other black Africans and selling them as slaves. So the whole motive for empire and colonialism in Africa was to stop slavery. It was to teach the Africans how they could manufacture other things other than other Africans that they could then sell on the world's markets. And yet we're told today, as it says here, it was exploitation and oppression, and it was rule by coercion. But the motive behind it was a good motive. It was about uplifting these people's standards and stopping them from enslaving one another. The former Labour MP admitted some critics may be concerned the source material provided to pupils was unbalanced, but reassured GB News that the book was well sourced. Well, I suspect that it's going to be unbalanced. I mean, this is the way that they would do things. They would say, oh, we provide two opposing views here, but one of the views will be far more weighted than the other. And since he's a former Labour MP, I suspect it's going to be the left-wing arguments are going to be more weighted. He said, we go through a rigorous process of, one, determining, is this a really important historical issue where there is a live debate both for and against. And of course, this is because, they, as I pointed out earlier, they will say, oh, the debate is settled. The argument is settled. We don't need to debate this in cases such as climate change or cases such as World War II, as if there is no debate to be had. And there is a debate to be had about those issues. It's not settled. They said, we go through a rigorous process of sourcing and look for the historical sources. We test it out independently with teachers and educators from both sides of the perspective to ensure that the sources are accurate, that they are rigorous, that they are balanced, and it is a contested issue. Under the heading of empire spreading infrastructure, the materials say Britain had profited from slavery, but empire changed direction. It abolished slavery, suppressed slave trading, then built railways, ports, steamships, telegraphs, and public services. But it doesn't tell you that the reason why they built all of that was to prevent the indigenous peoples from engaging in slavery. I mean, it's fair enough to say that the British people abolished slavery, but it doesn't tell you there that the people that were promoting it, the people that wanted to continue with it, were the black Africans. It's like when they ask for reparations, they always go to white people and say, oh, we want reparations. We want reparations for slavery. Well, the white people purchased those slaves from black Africans. The black Africans were given goods to the value of those slaves in order to purchase them in the first place. Why are they not going to these black African chiefs demanding reparations? They were the ones that were paid for them. I mean, the white people paid for the slaves. They didn't capture them. They didn't just steal them. They paid for them. Yet reparations are only ever demanded from the people that paid for the slaves, not the ones that got them for nothing and were then paid for them by the white people. These developments, that's railways, ports, steamships, telegraphs and public services, drove economic development, connected regions to wider markets and made distance less of a barrier to travel, work, news, prices and opportunity. Under the argument that growth was built through systemic exploitation, the book says British imperial growth was built through systemic exploitation. I don't think it was built through systemic exploitation. And you can say you exploit the natural resources, and that's not seen as a negative thing, but human exploitation, i.e. Getting something out of a person for minimum of expense. I mean, that is part of capitalism, isn't it? It's the nature of capitalism, unfortunately, is that you try to get the most, you try to make the most profit with the least costs. But it's not like these other peoples were prevented from engaging in this themselves. I mean, they could manufacture things and sell them. And it's not as if the white people back at home in Britain were not also being exploited. I mean, they were being exploited. At the time of slavery, you had white children that were being put down chimneys, up and down chimneys, to clean chimneys out at the age of 6 or 7 years old. Or they were running between the operating machinery in the workhouses, the textiles, trying to grab needles and bits of cotton that had fallen on the floor, and they would regularly lose limbs. It's not like the black Africans were being treated in a different way somehow to the white people, the poor white, the working class whites back in Britain. Slavery was foundational. And I would say slavery was foundational not in the British Empire, but slavery was foundational in Africa. It was an essential part of the economy in Africa and had been so for thousands of years. And it still is, because we failed to eradicate it. Slavery was foundational. Enslaved people were treated as property. And if you have property, you're not going to mistreat that property, are you? You're not going to damage that property. If you have an expensive car, you're not going to go out there and hit it with a sledgehammer. You're going to look after it. You're going to polish it. You're going to check that it has enough oil in it. You're going to check that it has enough engine coolant, that sort of thing. You're going to look after it. And yet we see today, oh, slave people were treated as property, as if that's a terrible thing. Surely it would be better to be treated as if you were the property of your boss, which would mean that he wouldn't allow you to go homeless. He wouldn't allow you to go unfed. He certainly wouldn't say to you, well, I only want you to come in for 1 hour's work this week and then that's it. And I'm only going to pay you for 1 hour. If you were seen as property, then your employer would have to do everything that was required for you. And it was better to be seen as property. And it's like when people complain about subjects. Oh, the king used to have subjects. You used to be subject to the king. Yeah, his subjects, his property, which meant he was responsible for you, which meant that he would look after your interests. Because without a people, what's the king? He has nothing if he doesn't have his own people. So this idea that being treated as property was a bad thing, I don't think it was necessarily a bad thing. Perhaps it was in some cases, but if you're looking at something as being your property, you are going to look after that property. You're going to protect it because it's yours. Coerced into forced labour. Well, who coerced the black Africans into forced labour? It was other black Africans. They were the ones that kidnapped them or won them in war or what have you. And it's not that they were forced to do that, unless you're going to say, well, you're forced to work to eat. I mean, if you don't work, you're not going to be able to eat, are you? And that's the way that it was back then. So when they say it was forced labour, I mean, it was working for payment in kind. It was working on a farm and being fed and housed and clothed for doing so. I mean, saying it's forced labour here, I mean, it's sort of implies that you don't need to do any labor at all and somehow you're just magically going to be given clothing and food and a roof over your head. And today we don't have slavery, but we still have to work in order to earn wages so that we can pay for all these things. So if you're going to say that it was forced labor back then, it's still forced labor today. People are still forced to go out and work in order to pay for the roof over their head, the same as slaves were forced to go out and work in order to be given a roof over their head. They were converted into imperial wealth, but the slaves benefited from this as well, didn't they? Because they were fed, clothed and housed. And you look at Africa and you look at the starvation that occurs there, you look at these famines that occur there, that never happened to these slaves, did it? The slaves were well looked after. In actual fact, it makes it clear that the slaves that were in Britain were actually better off than the people that weren't slaves in a letter that was sent to Queen Elizabeth I complaining about all these black people that were in the country. I think there's about 700 of them, not very many. I think it refers to them as blackamoors. And it says that these blackamoors are actually being employed, by which it meant they are slaves. And it said that we have these white people here that are starving. And, you know, they would give their eye teeth to be a slave because it meant that they would be looked after. And it meant that the slaves had a higher status than the people that were unemployed. And it makes it very clear in that letter to Elizabeth I. So this idea that it was all coerced labor. I mean, people wanted to be slaves. White people wanted to be indentured servitude because it meant that they had food. It meant that they had a roof over their heads. So it's not sort of converting that into imperial wealth just for the empire. I mean, that work was converted into food and housing and heating for the person that was doing it. Plantation profits helped build the infrastructure of empire. Ports, banks, insurance and manufacturing. And who was it that benefited from that? Well, it was all the people that lived there in that country. They were the ones that benefited from this increased wealth. You can't say that the slaves didn't benefit from the farm making a profit. I mean, they did benefit because they were fed and housed and kept warm and clothed. Exploitation continued through extractive policies that created colonial dependency on Britain. Yes, we only set these things up because he wanted these people to become dependent upon us. I mean, these people were dependent upon us because they couldn't provide for themselves. And it's still the same today. If you look on the television, you'll see adverts asking you to donate money to Africa because they haven't got clean water and they don't know how to dig their own wells. And white people go over there and they dig wells for them, essentially, and they set up water purification systems And what that shows is that they're not able to do that for themselves. Otherwise, they wouldn't be asking white people to do it for them. So they are dependent upon us anyway. It's not that the British Empire made them dependent upon us. It's almost symbiotic, really. I mean, that was the way that it was looked at in the past, is that it was a symbiotic relationship. Black people aren't capable of finding their own wells. They have difficulty with farming, making their own food. They have difficulty doing these things. We, however, white people, we know how to do these things. We're good at doing these things, and we need people to work on them. So if we can get these black people to work on our farms, then we can, in exchange, give them the food that our farms create, the water that our wells provide access to. And it was a symbiotic relationship. And I can bet you that they are certainly not teaching the children that in this book. But at least they are teaching them that these are contested ideas, at least. They're not saying to them, oh, well, it's already been decided the British Empire was terrible and your ancestors were horrible people. At least they're saying it's contested. My argument is that they will be weighting the actual source material that is actually given to these children. And also, just that, I mean, the whole curriculum is going to be implying to them that the correct answer to all of this is to say that the empire was oppressive, and to say that Russia was wrong to go into Ukraine. And they will understand that they are supposed to give certain answers to this. And then the people that question that, whether that is the right answer, they will be given this weighted evidence. So in a way, it's like saying, well, we control both sides of the argument. We're going to pretend that there is two sides to this argument, but really we're not going to give you the full information on one side, and we're going to exaggerate the information on the other. I would like to actually have a look at this piece of the curriculum to see exactly what it's like. Perhaps I might be able to do that at some point in the future for a future Daily Nationalist. Well, thank you very much for listening. I will be back tomorrow with Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson. God bless and hail victory.